الرحیم.
شروع اللہ کے نام سے جو بڑا مہربان نہایت رحم والا ہے.
جنت میں رسول ازلی لکھا ہے, ساری جنت میں رسول ازلی لکھا ہے. ڈالی ڈالی پہ علی اور ولی لکھا ہے, سب سبتوں پہ حسن اور کلی پر زہرا, سرخ پھولوں پہ حسین ابن علی لکھا ہے. ساری جنت میں رسول ازلی لکھا ہے. ڈالی
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the Merciful, the Compassionate. All praises to Allah, the Creator of the universes and their Sustainer, the Provider of believers and unbelievers. And may His choicest blessings be on the seal of His prophets, the last of His messengers and His holy progeny. And in particular, may His incessant blessings ever continue to flow on the 10th successor to the holy prophet, on Imam ابو الحسن علی ابن محمد الہادی صلوات اللہ وسلام علیہ. Today I hope to start with that one hadith of yesterday that I committed to finish. For that matter, there are a number of episodes of extraordinary nature that have emanated from Imam Hadi علیہ السلام. But the one that I left out was only amongst that selection that I had made of the variety of such extraordinary events. This was of importance to me for a number of reasons, which I hope will emerge as I set out the episode to you. It is of a Christian. And we get the hadith from Kutub Rawandi, who reports from Ishaq of Musal. He says that his father knew a Christian living there by the name of Yusuf bin Yaqub, and one day the friend of his father, he spoke to his father saying, I have a very serious matter. So the father says, what is it that is worrying you? He says, Mutawakkil has called me. And it was very common in those days that if a tyrant like Mutawakkil called you, you could smell the sense of death. So everybody became nervous. This person did not appear that nervous, so the friend asks, but you seem to be in control of yourself. He says, yes, I am, because, and this is a lesson for us from this Christian. He says, I am because I have bought my safety. I have bought my safety from Allah, be glorified and exalted, for 100 dinars, which is 100 gold coins. My promising Allah that I will pay that sum to Imam Hadi alayhi salam. So this person, his half father, got flabbergasted. He knew the Christian for a long time, but always knew him as a Christian. How this, he suddenly comes to make that kind of another. And then the assurance he had, the confidence he had in that another, was absolutely bewildering to this moment. So So he says, what will you do? He says, well, I will take the 100 dinars with me. I'll go to Samarra. I will look for Imam Mahdi, give him the 100 dinars before I go to Sayyid Tawakkil, and then let me see what happens. So he sets out with his servant. When he reaches Samarra, it was the first time he was going to Samarra, he didn't even know the road, he started to get puzzled. Now his first question was, where do I get this Imam Hadi alayhi salam? He had the 100 dinars. He didn't know which way to go, as is so often the case when you enter a town in which you are a total stranger. You come to a crossroad, you don't know whether to go right or to go left. So he decided he would stop. He took out his 100 dinars, put them in an envelope, put the envelope in his purse, put his purse in his right pocket. And then he sat on the donkey and he said, I will leave it to Imam Hadi alayhi salam. I am now his guest and he will take me to his house. This is a Christian behaving in this way. I wonder how much of that faith we Shias would have in conducting ourselves with that confidence. So he left his donkey, he was on a donkey, and he says the donkey started moving. He was not in control of the reins, he did not even start the donkey. The donkey started moving on its own, and it kept moving. It turned right and it turned left into small alleys. Of course, this man, Yusuf bin Yaqub, was totally ignorant of where he was. He was just letting the donkey move. And the stage came when the donkey, he says, stopped. When the donkey stopped, he took the reins. Now he's forgetting that he's left it to the Imam to guide him. And he pulls the strain and whips the donkey. The donkey is not prepared to move at all. He does not move forward. He does not move backward. The whip doesn't work at all. So he says to himself, my Lord, this must be the house of Imam Hadi. He must be controlling my donkey. But he did not dare come out and inquire, because if he's asked who he was, he would be told, what is this Christian doing here? A Christian is a kafir, he can't even enter the house. He said, all kinds of questions might arise. But his servant was a Muslim, so he asked the servant to make an inquiry. So when the servant knocks the door is open. And when the door is open, he says, a servant comes out. And before the servant is asked anything, he says, yes, you are at the right place. This is the house of Ibn Rasulullah al-Hadi alayhi salam. He says, this is the first sign that I am in the right place. He dismounts and enters the house. As he enters the house, the servant takes him to a certain waiting room. He is in the waiting room and another attendant arrives. When the other attendant arrives, he says, he stands up to say that I want to meet Imam Ali ibn Hadi alayhi salam. Before he opens his mouth, he is asked, are you Yusuf bin Yaqub? And he says to himself, this is the second sign that I am in the right place. And he says, yes, I am. So he says, well, let us go. The Imam alayhi salam is ready to meet you. He says, that's the third sign. And when whilst they're leaving the waiting room, they pass through another room where this attendant waited. Another attendant comes out and says, Yusuf bin Yaqub. And he says, Naam, yes, I am. He says, you can hand over to me the 100 gold coins, the 100 dinars you have brought, which are in the envelope, which is in the purse in your right pocket. You can see he would have no hesitation in parting with the money. He instantly took out the purse, took out the envelope and handed it over. He says, well, that's the fourth sign. And as he enters to meet the Imam alayhi salam, the Imam welcomes him. And the first question the Imam alayhi salam asks him is, Yusuf bin Yaqub, you have not yet become a Muslim. You can see the anxiety of the Imam alayhi salam. Everything else is secondary. Where he comes from, why he has come there, what are the 100 dinars for, are all secondary. What is of paramount importance to the Imam alayhi salam, and this is a great lesson for us, that this is how the Imam is viewing us. How are we behaving? He turns round to the Christian and says, you have not yet become a Muslim. And he gives a beautiful answer. He says, O grandson of the Prophet, I have already seen 4 signs since I have just reached your house, and indeed 5, because I didn't know how to come to you. I left it to you to guide my donkey. I've seen 4 signs in your house, and added to that, I've already seen 5 signs. I know where truth lies. So the Imam alayhi salam says, but Yusuf, strive hard in your lifetime so that you do become a Muslim. But I can tell you one thing, that your son named so-and-so will become a Muslim. And he says, I'm proud. And the Imam alayhi salam says, another lesson for us. This is why I did not want to, when time was over yesterday, I did not want to omit. I'm omitting a couple of other matters which I hope I'll squeeze in tomorrow, at least one of them. But I did not want to omit this one, because it contains so much, as I said at the beginning, so many birds are killed in this one stone. He then says to Yusuf, he says, your son will become a Muslim. Not only that, but he will become a Shia. And he will become a Shia of whom we will be proud. His name is in my list. Do you remember? We discussed this a couple of years ago. Again, it was Abu Basir who met the 6th Imam alayhi salam and asked the 6th Imam alayhi salam, Yabna Rasulillah, when I left home, my wife was pregnant. And Imam Sadiq alayhi salam turns around and says, Abu Basir, she has already delivered. Haven't you got the good news? My congratulations, she has already delivered. So Abu Basir said, yes, I knew I would get the news from you. But say to me, is it a girl or a boy? And the Imam smiles and says, Abu Basir, it is just as you have prayed to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it is a boy. So Abu Basir asks, what name shall I give him? And you remember the Imam alayhi salam gives him the name and then tells him further to say, Abu Basir, after him you will have 2 more boys and 2 more girls, and give Abu Basir their names. Abu Basir says, Mawla, it's gracious of you to tell me all this, but pray that they should be your Shias to the last hour. And the Imam alayhi salam says, yes, indeed they will be. Do you have any doubt on that? Abu Basir says, Yabna Rasulillah, what can I say? The times are hard. How much harder are our times today? Are we sure what our sons and our daughters will be? Let us pray tonight in the name of Imam Hadi alayhi salam, that for his sake Allah should keep all our sons and daughters in Iman as shares of the 12 Imams to the last breath. Well, this is, and then just to complete my reminding you of that hadith, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam got up himself. Abu Basir says, Mawla, you always ask your servant to get up. He says, yes, but this is a list I have got from my grandmother, Bibi Fatima Zahra, salamullahi alayha. I don't let any hands which are not Tahir to touch it. He got up himself, got the list, and says, turns the pages to Abu Basir, these are the names of your children. I say it then, and I would like to repeat it now. Do not underestimate the fact that you are a Shia. Do not underestimate the fact that you are a Shia, and always try to remain so, because your names are all in that list that the 12th Imam alayhi salam now has written. Our struggle is, and this is why I made a special prayer, that those names should remain in that list. That is our greatest concern, that to the last breath we should go with our names in that list of shears which the Imam alayhi salam is saddled with. And he who has that list is the true Imam. He who does not have that list is an imposter, is not a true Imam. This is how we judge the situation. And you can see this Christian is told by the Imam alayhi salam, your son will be a Shia. And then he is told, oh Yusuf, I know we're discussing other things, but I know why you have come here, because an Imam does not need to be told why his supplicant is with him. He says, I know why you are here. Well, go to meet Mutawakkil and do not have any fears at all. Only that will happen in his presence with which you will be pleased. He said straight away, he said, Sayyidi, the moment I kept that nazar, I knew this is what you would tell me, and I knew what the result would be. And hence, I did not want to go to him before coming to you first. Even they knew who the true Khalif was. Whether the true Khalif was the one sitting in the throne, or the true Khalif was the one in the alleys of Samarra. He left, and indeed, in no time, well, he goes to Mutawakkil, obtains favorable results. Mutawakkil only wanted to compliment him and honor him, and he went back to meet his other friends and tell them exactly what happened. This is the extraordinary way in which one finds the Imam alayhi salam behaving. And these acts of extraordinary events permeate through the lives and activities of all our Imams, right from the first Imam alayhi salam, and we see them happening today even from right after from the 12th Imam alayhi salam. If Allah will so desire, next year inshallah we shall discuss those events that permeate through that series of sinless Imams to the one who is the Imam today and acts exactly in the way his grandfather acted. And indeed, the son of Qutb Rawandi reported this particular incident. His son says, I continued to look for the son of Yusuf bin Yaqub. And when I met him on one occasion, entirely by the grace of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when I met him, I asked him whether he was of what religion he belonged. And as I sat and talked to him for that little while, I discovered that not only was he a Shia, but the kind of staunch Shia he was that Imam Hadi predicted years ago to his father. I then asked him, how did your father die? He said, alas, he died a Christian. And indeed, he did not get the good news from the 10th Imam alayhi salam that he would convert. He was goaded by the 10th Imam alayhi salam to convert and become a Muslim. He didn't have that good fortune, but what he was told about his son came absolutely true. But this is how the Imam alayhi salam acted throughout. And it is with this capacity, and it is with this confidence, and this devotion to Allah, the glorified and exalted, that he was able to keep the imamah going despite the fact that he was always under vigilance, house arrest, or at least under surveillance of Mutawakkil and his men. Mutawakkil had planted a number of spies over the Imam alayhi salam. Since the Imam alayhi salam was in Medina, he never had any peace. There was surveillance on him even in those days. And it was in those days that he continued to perfect the system of wilaya, the system of wakala that his illustrious father and grandfather had already started. Indeed, you will remember the system of wakala was started actually by the 6th Imam alayhi salam. You recall us discussing this when we were discussing his activities. And he did that because he knew that his father, Musa ibn Ja'far, salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi, would be in prison for a number of years, disconnected from his followers. Hence, to maintain that context between his father, I beg your pardon, that his son, Musa ibn Ja'far alayhi salam, would be in prison. And to maintain the contact between his son when he would be the Imam and the Ummah, he set up the system of wakala. He appointed numerous wukala. Indeed, the first known established wukala of the Imam alayhi salam starts from the 6th Imam alayhi salam. But evidently, it was known that it was to provide for the contingency of the seventh Imam alayhi salam being in prison for a long time. But the glory of the seventh Imam alayhi salam lay in the fact that even when he was in prison, he controlled the activities of the wukala, all of them, right from the prison itself. And we have gone through this and discussed this last year. No, the year before, we discussed that in some detail. Then it moved to Imam Rabah alayhi salam. He further polished up and gave refinements to the system of wukala, indeed appointed his own fresh wakils. He had some peace in the sense that Mahmud allowed some people to visit the 8th Imam alayhi salam, even when he was in Mashhad. But because of his distance from the people, being in Tus, a long way away, and his people could not reach him, majority of the Ummah could not reach him, he had to set up a mechanism whereby he would have a communication, he would have a pipeline between himself and his people. Some people who managed to get there were able to see him, which meant that the wukala who traveled were able to meet him and discuss things with him in person. The ninth Imam, alayhi salam, as you know, was in further surveillance. He could not meet the people. It was dangerous for people to meet him, as we discussed last year. Hence, he further perfected the system and further made appointments which made it easy for him to delegate functions. The tenth Imam now, and I'm cutting a long story short, the tenth Imam alayhi salam now was in worse situation. In the year, so long as he was under the Khilafah of Mustansir, Mu'tasim, things were not bad, because Mu'tasim had some leniency towards the descendants of Imam Ali alayhi salam. But the moment he passed away and Mutawakkil became the Caliph in the year 232, after Hijra, things changed radically. Now, Mutawakkil issued numerous orders, very stern orders, all against the Shias. His first order was that all Shias, and this must be so painful to Imam Hadi alayhi salam at the time, the first order was that all Shias who received allowances from the state should stop receiving allowances altogether. So you either lied and said you were not a Shia, or you would not get an allowance at all. And there was no chance of lying if, for a number of years, you were receiving an allowance on the basis that you were a Shia, that you are an Alim, or were known to be an Alim. Then you would not receive your what we call social security allowance in England. I don't know if there was a similar name here, but the money that is paid from Baytul Mal to the poor people of the city. And each city had that arrangement. And Shias were paid that amount under Mustansir in Egypt, in various parts of Iraq, in Iran, in various parts of the country. All that had to be stopped. You can imagine what would have happened to Imam Hadi alayhi salam. And this is at a time when he was then transferred from Medina to Samarra so that his communication was cut off. And yet he had immediately to organize for people who were poor to receive funds. The youths keep saying, what is this question of khums? This is something quite new, quite novel. It isn't. And this khums that the mustahideen receive is not something fabricated by them. The Imams alayhi salam themselves used to receive khums. And Imam Hadi alayhi salam used to receive khums. And that khums during this time was received by these wukala, and these wukala received orders from the Imam alayhi salam as to how much should be given to what poor persons, so that all poor persons kept receiving allowances, although the government stopped allowing. It is a fantastic organization that Imam Hadi alayhi salam set up, despite the fact that he was himself under surveillance. Tomorrow night, inshallah, when discussing his political life, I will say, inshallah, that his house was searched twice, because Mutawakkil got the news that he has money, that whose money is being distributed to the poor shears, that's paying mutawakkil. That is exactly what he wanted to stop. He wanted these shears all to die hungry, thirsty and poor, and on the streets as beggars. But money was reaching them. From where was money coming? And the answer he was given was, it is all from Al-Hadi. He said, I've got Al-Hadi from Medina here, and I've got people supervising his house. Nobody is allowed even to enter his house. That is what the Christian, whose story I just told you, that is what he was worried about. That is, there is person supervising, and he was going to meet Mutawakkil. He did not want Mutawakkil to know before he goes there that he had seen Al-Hadi. Such was the terrorism that Al-Hadi was living under, and the terrorism that Mutawakkil felt. It was tyranny to the highest extent. Those were the first orders issued. Then Mutawakkil took three steps straight away. His first step was that all Shia ministers be dismissed from office. And there were justice that's out of hand. All Shias in any particular office should be dismissed from office. All Shias in the army should be dismissed from the army. And he set up a new army altogether of only people who were anti-Shia, so that they can kill the Shias at will. So you can see the history through which our predecessors had gone. And then he issued a new order to the ulama. Mahmud had stopped the ulama from writing anti-Shia slogans. For example, the curses on Imam Ali alayhi salam, although they had officially been stopped under Umayyads, but the anti-Shia slogans continued to be written. Mahmud stopped all that. Mutawakkil restored it and gave them the authority to issue anti-Shia slogans and propagate such slogans. Well, in Egypt, even stronger orders were issued, because there the Shias were more affluent. They were in better financial position than Shias in other places. Their orders were that no Shia should even ride a horse. In other words, in today's terms, it would be said, no Shia should own a car. They should all move on feet and cover the distances that have to be covered on feet. None should have a horse. None should have more than one servant, so that he should not be able to defend himself against the state or create problems against the state with the help of his servants. None should have more than one servant. And none should own an estate. So if you had property, if you had land, you had buildings, they would be confiscated. And the only ground for confiscation would be that you are a Shia. And no compensation would be given. You can see such harsh measures being taken against the Shias of the time. The Imam alayhi salam had to cope with it all. Well, when the money that the Imam alayhi salam was to receive permeated through that beautiful cell system that he had already established, because he foresaw all this coming. And when he foresaw all this coming, he prepared for it. All these cells, and he prepared his wukala for it, warning them of the times that lie ahead and how they must conduct themselves when those situations arose. Well, I say this taking up a lot of your time so that the youth can realize that these Imams alayhi salam that we are talking about were not merely experts on standing on a prayer mat and worshipping Allah all night. They were not merely experts in fasting all day, month after month. They had the acumen of dealing with political circumstances under surveillance, under very difficult strategies, and to deal with financial and fiscal complications in a way that required great perspicacious and great complications to be solved before the money can reach the beneficiaries. He had set up a complete cell work, and through that cell work, money reached the people. Money came from Qum, for example, and Ahwaz. By then, he had set up regions with districts, and under districts were cities, and cities then had their wukala. Then there were different villages, and villages had their wukala, and all these were teams would cooperate with each other and with the districts and the region. The four broad regions were, one was in Iraq, consisted of Baghdad, Madain, the area near Karbala and Kufa. One was in Basra and Ahwaz, so linking with Iran. One was in Qom and Hamadan. One was in Egypt, which dealt with Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Hijaz of the time, and Yemen. Four different demarcations. And we discussed the 11th Imam alayhi salam. We will discuss further regional bodies that Imam Askari alayhi salam developed, because time for Ghaiba was drawing even nearer in the time of the 11th Imam alayhi salam. But that, inshallah, we shall discuss on Friday night. But for the moment, these were four different regions which he had established. So money was permeating. Now, Mutawakkil gets horribly worried. He gets terribly disturbed. He says, how is this money reaching there? So an investigation is set up. As always, some of our own people will pass information. You remember, and next year we shall discuss this further, when the 12th Imam alayhi salam will have just reappeared. Indeed, a list of the wukala will reach the hands of Mu'taz, who wanted to know exactly who the wukala were, and they were all arrested. Well, such information again, and it's a sad part of our history that our own people should be behaving like this. And that is happening even today a lot in our world. Our own shias going to supply information to tyrants against our own selves. How many supplied such information to Saddam? Now we can talk a little more openly. How many of us supplied information against our own brothers to Saddam? Is this the way shias should behave? And haven't we learned till today when harder times lie ahead? Well, again that happened, and some of the names came out. All those wukala were arrested. One of the rules that Mutawakkil had established, which I overlooked to mention, was that if there was a dispute between a Shia and a non-Shia, the Qazi was bound to listen to the non-Shia first. And having heard the non-Shia, he had no business to listen to the Shia at all. He had to give decision in accordance with what the non-Shia alleged against the Shia. And that is how judgment was passed. So you can see even rules of justice were bent entirely to work against Shias at the risk of complete injustice. There was then not even semblance, not even a face of justice in their courts of law. However, in keeping with that, when these wukala were arrested and they were asked if they were wukala and if they received money, and even if they denied, it mattered not. They would be assassinated, they would be tortured, they would be imprisoned straight away, depending upon how Mutawakkil wanted to behave. Those who were regarded as more competent, more serious wukala would be killed on the spot. The Imam alayhi salam, of course, could not own them, could not make representations for them. But he had to put the situation right. And instantly, whenever one was arrested, another got appointed, and another came into his place. So you can see how beautifully that system was working. The news reached the Imam alayhi salam, and instantly he would use his methods of communication whereby the district wakil would be informed of it and would immediately put in another person in place so that Shias as a whole should not suffer. The Qom's money that we pay today is meant to be used in exactly that way for the welfare and benefits of Shias and to uplift the Shia theology, the religion and the teaching of religion, tabligh in other words. However, Imam Hadi alayhi salam did one more thing. He set up this practice, he rather reinforced the practice that was set up by Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, because he anticipated the imprisonment of the seventh Imam alayhi salam. Certain people were so educated, and this he did, the tenth Imam alayhi salam did, while he was still in Medina. Certain people were so educated that they received enough knowledge of fiqh, and they were given the right to issue, not to issue fatwa, but to issue answers to the Mu'mineen. So if a Mu'min wanted to ask a question of religion, and this is also that religion should not suffer. If he wanted to ask the question of religion, and the Imam alayhi salam was not available, he could ask Mr. X. And the rule was, the announcement was, that whatever answer Mr. X gives, is as though the answer that the Imam alayhi salam has given. You can see that synchronizing with the setup we have today. The Imam in Ghaiba, there are these mustahideen, and we are told this in writing by the Imam alayhi salam, which inshallah we shall discuss next year. We can ask the question to our mustahid as we do today. And the answer that the mustahid gives us, we can act upon. And so is an answer given by the 12th Imam alayhi salam himself. We can see how grateful we are to the 10th Imam alayhi salam for setting all this up for us for the period of Ghaiba. And this is why I thought, any session, I lamented that we do not get time to discuss the teachings of the 10th Imam alayhi salam, and I lamented this on Thursday night, as you remember, but I thought this was more important to discuss, so that the youth knows that the system we have today came from the 10th Imam alayhi salam in its further refinements and replenishments. Well, so the people were not at a loss. Whom, even at that time, had a number of ukala who were well learned in religion and were able to answer questions at whenever they arose. Similarly, money that came became transferred in this way. And this that I am telling you is not a myth. Is not a myth. This information is contained in Sunni books as well. But keeping them aside, there are extant letters that Imam Hadi alayhi salam wrote. He wrote letters, and he had special people to carry these letters safely and faithfulness to the recipients. These letters would go to a certain wakil, and he would be told that from now onwards, you are not my wakil in this area at all. And please make sure that if you receive money from anybody outside your area, do not receive it. Only receive money from people within your area whom you know. Well, this is to protect him from being arrested. Mutawakkil's spies would go and pay him money. They would never pay homes in their lives. The wakil would immediately be able to know, this is a stranger, he's not a man of my area, and would refuse to accept money from him. Those that he knew, he would direct to the wakil of that other area. And the purpose of that was so that the money collected could be channeled to the right source, through the right channels, and communication and disbursement of those funds should become easy according to the system established. The Imam alayhi salam, therefore, you can see, went through a severe test. He was being exhausted by mutawakkil, but Allah's grace, he never became exhausted. He kept fighting. That jihad was perhaps one of the sternest jihads we know of. Bad news reaches him, immediately he takes steps to remedy the situation. And he knew exactly the wukala. There was some wukala in Iran, for example, whom Imam Rawa alayhi salam had appointed. And it so happened that those wukala would train their children. Their children would know that these funds that have arrived are not our funds. And they would be told, so that they don't start inheriting them, they will be told these are khumsmen and will be dispersed in this way. When the father passed away, the son took over the responsibilities, and it went on. The best example that I can give you is of Uthman bin Sa'id. Uthman bin Sa'id, as inshallah I shall remind you next year again, was the first deputy, the first wakil khas of the 12th Imam alayhi salam. And we shall discuss about their appointments in greater detail next year. But for the moment, only to put you in background, the position was this. He was taken by his father when he was only 12 years old. And he was taken to Al-Jawad alayhi salam. And he was told, "Oh Imam, I have brought my son. It is my desire that I should place one of my sons in the service of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And so, I have brought him to you." He's only 12 years old. I have given him some learning of religion, so he knows very little. But he will be able to help you in your manual work. He was only supposed to do little manual work. Imam Hadi alayhi salam received him and kissed him. After departing, Imam Jawad alayhi salam received him and kissed him and told the father, you will be proud of this son. And he will be one who will serve not only me, but he will serve four imams at a go in succession. The Imam alayhi salam, that is Imam Jawad alayhi salam, trained him. Ultimately, he became a chamberlain. In the times when people could not feel Imam Jawad alayhi salam, it was Uthman bin Sa'id who would meet them on the door, would speak to them, and deal with the matters that they were there to ascertain from the Imam alayhi salam. Then, in the time of Imam Hadi alayhi salam, Imam Hadi alayhi salam appointed him a chamberlain. Chamberlain is in charge of the exchequer. So he was the person who received his homes from various places. And so perfect was that system that it is written in the books that on one occasion, a wakil who had been removed because he took sides with the wakil and was removed, but the everybody in that line of the chain of movement of money had not become fully aware. Money had come to Baghdad and was going to that particular wakil who had been dismissed. Uthman bin Sa'id was able, through his other information, to intercept that money and recover the whole of sum of homes and save it for the orphans and the poor. So you can see that kind of machinery was set up by Imam Hadi alayhi salam. So little is known about it because everything was operating incognito. Everything was operating confidentially so that the news does not go out to the authorities. But work progressed in this way. Imam Hadi alayhi salam built up Uthman bin Sa'id, and indeed he became what we today know as Waqil al-Mutlaq. Those in the world today of Aghafistani, Banadillahu, for example, there is just one Waqil al-Mutlaq. Maybe there are two, but at the most that number of people. He was in that status. And when Imam Hadi alayhi salam was stopped from meeting people, and people would be punished merely for visiting Imam Hadi alayhi salam, then at that point in time, Uthman bin Sa'id said this. He may meet the person directly, he may meet the person indirectly. He opened up a shop of a butter seller, and through selling butter, he conveyed money to the Imam alayhi salam. When the security people looked at the tin, they found butter. They didn't realize there were gold coins also. And things would move out from there also. But it was all done in such meticulous way that the poor, orphans and widows did not suffer. But as time passes by, and I need to keep a watch on that clock, I wish to move on from there to something I cannot avoid saying tonight, and I want to say tonight to save my time tomorrow night. One of the things that Mutawakkil did at that point in time in the life of Imam Hadi alayhi salam was to try and destroy the grave of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Can you imagine dealing with all this that I was talking about was painful to Imam Hadi alayhi salam? But how much more painful must it have been for him to know that now even the grave of his grandfather is going to be destroyed, demolished completely. And it's all remnants of it will be removed so that nobody should know where Al-Husayn alayhi salam was buried. When the will of Allah was that people should be able to visit and salute Imam Husayn alayhi salam to the last day, when the place is a repository of 70,000 angels coming down and returning to heaven every day from the grave of Imam Hussain alayhi salam, what was the power of Mutawakkil going to reach him? Where was it going to reach him? But the mere news must have pained the Imam alayhi salam so deeply. And why did that happen? Historically, because Mutawakkil was taking steps to demolish all cells where he suspected the wukala were operating and he could not control them, he could not reach them. He found two places, one in Egypt, with which I will not trouble you now, that one in Karbala, he found that people went as the words of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and a lot of things passed. Wukala would go there and pass money. And pass money in a way in which people, the security officers, would not be able even to sense. And he found that a number of activities went on to the benefit and advantage of the shias, which his aim was to curb and curtail. Hence he decided, I will finish this altogether. The first order issue, as you're well aware, but it is an occasion that we cannot miss to state. First order, nobody should visit the shrine. In those days there was already a shrine of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Not satisfied with that, and people still visited the shrine. Not satisfied with that, he issued orders that the shrine should be demolished, and he was in fact demolished by his people. And then, second orders issued, all the houses that were built around them should all be demolished. And all those houses were demolished. The place was to be converted into a field. And now crops were to be grown, even in the desert. Attempts were to be made and crops were to be born. And indeed, the grave of Imam Hussein alayhi salam was to be cultivated. That even his own army refused to do. Some of them saw the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his progeny in their dreams. Some of them said, whether we accept Hussein alayhi salam as an imam or not, we know him as the grandson of the Prophet, and whether we would help him or not, if we were in Karbala on that day, today we will not do this to his grave. But Mutawakkil was not going to be desisted, and this will give you the idea of how stern he was, how deep was his enmity against Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. He sent Jews there, and mind you, Jews were prepared to undertake this task. So you can see the nature of Jews even at that time. They went in and their bread brought water, and they wanted to splash the entire grave of Imam Hussein alayhi salam with water, so that there is a stream flowing on it all the time and nobody can even visit the grave. There is no sign of the grave there. But as you know, a hair was created. That is, the water reached up to the grave of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and then diverted. Miraculously diverted, keeping the grave dry and intact, and joined in at the other end again. That Mutawakkil, all the Jews, could not resist. And indeed, any attempt made to deal with that grave of Imam Hussein alayhi salam did not succeed at all. But what he did succeed in doing is in killing those innocent zawads of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, who would go to the grave of Imam Hussein alayhi salam only to say, As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdillah. Ya Allah, today we also yearn to reach the grave of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Make it possible for the sake of Imam Hussein and his mother, for the sake of Imam Hadi alayhi salam, that we should be able to visit the grave of Imam Hussein alayhi salam as soon as possible. Well, and inshallah we shall, but in those days, even when the orders were so severe, people who visited were treated in that way. Yet they kept going, because this is the spirit in which we see Imam Hussein alayhi salam. What would have been the spirit in which Habib ibn Bazahir received that letter of Imam Hussein alayhi salam from Karbala? That was not even a letter written from Medina. Who else received an invitation to go and fight for Imam Hussein alayhi salam in that way? Until then, what happened was, people were told, don't come. Muhammad ibn Hanafiya says, brother, I must come with you. And he told, no, don't come. Abdullah bin Jafar is told, don't come. So many were stopped by the Imam to join into Karbala. Habib ibn Masahir received the golden invitation. The letter goes, Ya Habibi, Ya Habib, oh my dear Habib, I am now encircled by enemies. I do not have anywhere to go. I need help, and I only thought of you that I write to you that you come over and speak to the Prophet. Oh Habib, what honor you received. Imam Hussein alayhi salam knew too well what was going to happen, and the presence of Habib would not have saved his life. But this is a special honor that Imam alayhi salam wanted to bestow Habib immediately gets into Karbala. And when he gets into Karbala, how fortunate, he is told, Abbas alayhi salam is told, give Habib the spear that I set aside for him. Because when armaments were being distributed, Imam Hussein alayhi salam kept one spear aside. Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam was ordered to keep one aside, and he obeyed. When Habib alayhi salam comes, he is given that, that spear. But look at the spirit of these personalities. The one preceding Habib, Habib was already 85 years old. Older than him was Muslim ibn al-Sajja. Muslim ibn al-Sajja continued to fight for the Imam alayhi salam. At his last hour, the Imam alayhi salam gets to the body of Muslim ibn al-Sajja. May our lives be sacrificed of Imam alayhi salam. When everybody fell, the Imam alayhi salam was there to give him the last greeting, to give him the last dua before he leaves this world. So with Muslim ibn al-Sajja, Habib did not allow the Imam to go alone. He says, I'll come along with you. I'll keep you company, Baha'u'llah. Habib was there. Habib, al-Sajja looks at Habib and says, Habib, you keep fighting for the Imam. In Muslim ibn al-Sajja, Habib says, oh Muslim, if you have any wasiyah, tell me wasiyah. I don't know how much time I have left in this world, but within that time, I will try and perform your wasiyah. You don't have any other friend here now. Give me the wasiyah and I'll perform it. Muslim ibn al-Sajja points at Hussein and says, oh Habib, don't leave this man alone to the last breath. And Habib did that. He also went and fought. That time came when he also called the Imam, Assalamu alaykum ya Aba Abdullah. The Imam comes to Habib's body. Can you imagine what a painful time for the Imam? This is a dear friend from childhood, since childhood. So all these 57 years, Imam alayhi salam, your Habib, and Habib is now parting in the love of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. How could the Imam alayhi salam bid farewell to him? All he says is, Habib, you are leaving me in difficult times. Habib, I wrote to your letter to come and help me. Are you now going away whilst I'm still alive? And all that Habib says is, Ya Mullahi, what can I do? Your grandfather has already come to me. فلا لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون إنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون رحم الله من يقرأ الفاتحة.